It's a pleasure to be here in sunny Rapid City. I think when I left Missouri yesterday, we were 64 when I left, but I think we were like 22 this morning. So got a little shockwave in the system. But it is indeed a privilege to be here and talk to you a little bit about something that affects each and every one of you in this room, and it is the livestock export business, whether you're a seed stock producer, feeder cattle producer. But before I get into my presentation, as Jack told you, we go a ways back and show you how helpful Jack Whittier was when he was in Missouri, when he first moved there at the University of Missouri. First day of school there in the Columbia school system, one of the elementary schools didn't have a principal for the day, and they called over to University of Missouri and said, hey, do you have anybody that could fill in to be acting principal for the day? And Jack volunteered. So he went in, and he was getting settled in his office for the day. Little did he know, on the first day, little Johnny walked in the school building, walked by kindergarten, first grade, second grade, went right to third grade and sat down. The young lady, first-year school teacher, said, how old are you, son? He goes, I'm five. You have to start in kindergarten. He says, no, I'm starting third grade. They get in an argument. They can't settle it, so she grabs him by the ear. They go down to acting principal Jack Whittier's office to settle it. And Jack says, well, how do we handle this? He goes, I'm new to this kind of trouble. And the young lady said, well, I've been schooled in this. We'll bring him in. I'll ask him three questions. We'll prove to him why he can't be in third grade. Jack says, fine. They bring him in. Johnny, what's 2 plus 2? So, well, teacher, that's 4. Second question, what do you have in your britches that I don't have in mine? Oh, that'd be pockets. Third and final question, what does a cow have 4 of that I have 2 of? He said, well, teacher, it'd be legs. She says, okay, go outside and wait. She turns around and she says, Jack, what do we do? He says, I think we put him in third grade. I missed 2 out of 3 questions myself. Going to talk to you a little bit about opportunities and obstacles. It is a big world and it's a changing world, but it's not easy in this day and time. We have lots of opportunities before us, but some of these in the export world are a little hard to accomplish. So as we get into this, it's the first time in my career, and I've been in this business for about 20-some years, that you can actually throw a dart at the map and actually hit some interest in livestock genetics as countries are trying to develop their markets. What's driving the export market? Let's talk about these three things. First and foremost, it's population growth. We're adding 100 million people to this planet every year. And the one thing that's been said this morning in previous speakers, the thing that we all have in common is we all have to take some sort of nourishment. And these 100 million people that we add every year, and as we're going to head, and I'm going to show you another slide here, somewhere about 9 billion people by the year 2050. Urbanization. People moving from the rural countryside into cities. By the year 2015, 48% of the world's population will live in cities. So we've seen this big migration into the urban civilization, expanding economies. When you make more money, you spend more money, you live a little better, and I'll get into that. These are the three things that are going to be driving the demand for livestock genetics, and along with a lot of other products. When you look at where we've been as far as export numbers, the blue slide represents U.S. agricultural exports. You know, last year we were somewhere just close to $160 billion. The red represents our imports. This year we're going to be about $109 billion. This is one of the nice things for the U.S. economy. Agriculture is a net. We export more than we import, and we create a lot of jobs, and we create a lot of hometown business and economies all across this country. As I said, by the year 2050, the world population growth. This gives you some idea of where the numbers are. I go to Asia every 6 weeks, and this will give you some idea of the red represents where we're headed. You kind of see where we're at in the U.S. and where we're going to be heading. You see the population growth in South America, Africa. It's going to be the last frontier for our business, and Europe is going to be somewhat stable. And you see over the period of history of just how the numbers have grown. It's going to be people that drive this market, and it's going to have more and more demands on agriculture and who's producing the food. So when we have a drought here in this country, it affects everybody. Because when we get a little bit of a temperature, the rest of the world catches a cold. Because I had customers in Korea last year that were paying $12 and $13 a bushel for U.S. corn by the time they got it there. And then all of a sudden they're losing $80 or $100 per pig. And it affects them. It affects their business and what they do and how they feed. What happens when you make more money? What do we do here? We buy better television, better car to drive. But overseas, especially within Asia, when you start to make more money, besides having better living, you're going to eat a little better. And when you start to take someplace like China, with a 1.2 or 3 billion people, and you take their protein consumption up from 6 or 7 pounds a year of, say, pork, and you move it to 12, that's become a big market. It's become a big market not only for swine genetics, but for the feed and the grains they import and everything else. And this is just one country on the map around the world. So when you take those things and you start to factor them in, you see the trend lines in consumption of how the rest of the world, you see South America, you see Asia, and then you see kind of flatline where we are, European Union and North America, when you take all these factors. Then when you tie it into the production, you kind of see how production jumps, and you see that beef's pretty well flatline, pork's up, chicken's up. There is demand and demand for protein. So factor all those things in, the urbanization, expanding economies, the population. We've got demand for not only beef cattle, we've got demand for all breeds of beef cattle right now. For many years, it was just the Brahman breeds going to maybe Southeast Asia or going to Central and South America. Now we have real interest in Angus and Hereford and Simmental and some of the traditional breeds that you raise here. The world demand for dairy. The world is short milk. Throw a dart at the map, and I'm going to talk about countries here in a bit, but there is a world shortage of milk, and the number of dairy heifers being exported from this country is unprecedented right now. Also, horses. We just took 51 horses to Korea last week. The amount of horse production that's taking place in Asia, especially in China, and how horses are used to market other products. In 2 weeks, I'm taking the Anheuser-Busch Clydesdales to China for a four-month tour to sell a bottle of beer. So that gives you some idea of the interest in genetics. We have it, and the rest of the world needs it. Breeding swine, we've had unprecedented numbers in the amount of hogs have been exported from this country. So, U.S. genetics are a value-added product. A lot of universities and Jack Whittier and people before him and land-grant institutions, that we've done all this performance testing to identify lines that excel in growth, performance, feed efficiency. And one thing that's really brought this in the last few years is when feed got high. Because all of a sudden we thought our feed was high, the rest of the world's feed was higher. So people would come to us, and we've got to make animals efficient. Because people used to tell me in southern part of China near Hong Kong in the swine business, they would say, we don't care how long it takes a pig to get to market, but we just want it to be lean. Now, when corn got high, they changed their attitude. And they've changed their attitude for all species. So people are trying to come to our country to adopt our genetic evaluation systems. They want to put in breeding programs, breeding values, or trying to put in breed associations and try to catch up with us. It's the power of the pedigree. Whether what breed or what that you're interested or produce at home, whether it be Charolais or whether it be Angus. But it's all these numbers in here that people are trying to understand and get their arms around as far as raising and producing fast-growing, efficient animals that make them money and feed their people. A lot of people come to us and say, why are you selling live animals overseas when we should be selling boxed beef? Regardless of what it costs, and out of national security, a lot of countries are going to raise a certain amount of their food product, regardless of what it costs, because a lot of their elderly leaders can remember back to the end of World War II, or they remember back to the end of the Korean War, where they were hungry. And I'm going to be the first to tell you that hungry people are very dangerous people. And when you see this in places like North Korea, you get into Iran, and some of the people that lack food, it's something that has to be discussed, because hungry people are dangerous people. So all these things, if you're ever curious about how we fly animals, we fly a shipment of animals about every 6 days somewhere in the world. So we're taking a shipment of pigs to China on Monday night. So this gives you some idea of how the animals move by air, by boat. There'd be about 30 ships of this size that loaded this past year out of Wilmington, Delaware. Some load out of Galveston, Texas. Now our industry has modified 40-foot shipping containers into livestock units that we can actually transport on, that they've been modified, holes, fans put on them, troughs put in them, that we can actually ship 14 head of bred heifers in containers and pick them up and move them just like Walmart brings their freight in from China. So that's giving some opportunity that if you don't have to buy 1,000 head of cattle or 2,000 head of cattle, but you can buy 500 or 600. So that's something that's changed our industry, and those shipments go out of Eastport, Maine. Another thing, I've told you about the population expanding economies. This is probably has the biggest impact right now as far as people coming to the U.S. to buy livestock genetics, and that's disease. We've been very fortunate in this country that we've not had foot and mouth disease since 1929. But a lot of countries around the world are affected by this. As an example, Egypt had it about 16 months ago. They had to go and destroy 100,000 head of cattle. Korea has it about every 3 years. That's my second best clients because I know about every 3 years I get to repopulate them. So this is something that we have to do our due diligence as an industry. Our government has to do due diligence about checking people coming in. But foot and mouth disease, we got to keep it out, because if or when it happens, we're on an island and we're not going to be able to export our product. We all know what BSE from December 23rd of 2003 did to our industry. And we are still locked out of countries that we cannot export to as far as beef and live animal genetics, like, or any cattle, to like China. They refused to open their markets back to us. So those took years to get back in the market. Tuberculosis is still a problem. Example, if you're from the state of California, you're a TB state. You can't export to Russia. So this is something that it's an everyday thing that we think we have control of, tuberculosis, but it does keep people from exporting. This is something of a new virus. If you haven't heard about it, I'm just curious. Schmallenberg virus. How many have heard of it? A few. This is the new virus in Europe. This is something that's also created interest in sales for the U.S. Livestock industry. It's a virus. It was discovered in Schmallenberg, Germany. It causes abortions, deformed fetuses, and sheep and cattle. It's mostly all over Europe. So once this virus was detected, the Russians say, we don't want any cattle from Europe. Lebanon, we don't want any cattle from Europe. Egypt, we don't want any cattle from Europe. And this is spread all across Europe. This is the new one for your vocabulary as far as the cattle business, and it's going to create a lot of opportunity for us here as long as we keep it out. You know, some of the other diseases that have affected all industries here, the West Nile virus and the equine industry. You hear all the time about avian influenza in the poultry industry, the H1N1. Swine flu here a few years ago that kept us out of China for 23 months, and now the new one, the PED virus, that's going to have a major impact on swine production in this country. You're going to see a big, big hole in swine and slaughter hogs next summer because of this, and it's going to be something that may keep us out of some of the export markets for live animals. Talk to you a little bit about cattle markets and where, if I spin the globe and put my finger down of the markets, that are going to be opportunities for us. Turkey, country of Turkey, has taken a tremendous amount of animals from the United States for the last 3 or 4 years. They've taken it not only for dairy cattle, but for beef cattle. And now, even at the prices that we have now, are importing feeder cattle, 3 and 4 weight feeder cattle from the United States. And I know there's feed salesmen and feed representatives outside, but I don't care how sharp your pencil is. I don't know how they make it work of importing, but we've got them. And they need them. And there's only so many places around the world that have the health status that they can bring them from. I mentioned Egypt. When they quit throwing rocks and their government settled down, this is something else. I told you they destroyed 100 million head of cattle because of 100,000 head of dairy cattle because of foot and mouth disease. They have to repopulate that industry. Russia, this has been the big one. I'm curious here in the room, how many people have exported any cattle to Russia? Yeah, a few hands. This is the big market for Russia. It's for dairy, it's for beef, it's for everything. Russia keeps saying in 5 years we're going to be self-sufficient. I don't know if I'll live to see that. They've got a lot of management tools or a lot of management issues to get around to be able to be self-sufficient. This is a market that's going to continue to drive, and they're interested in the breeds that you have here and all across the Northland. Kazakhstan, their government says about 33,000 head of cattle that they need to bring in the next 5 years. Herefords and Angus. And they've got to be pedigreed. So this is another opportunity. They're going to bring them in. They've already brought in about 12,000 head of those. So it is a market that is slowly developing. I was on a USDA trade team. Went to Iraq a year ago December, this month. Their market is open. We've negotiated a protocol, and it's going to be for dairy cattle. If you're an oil company, you want to go in and drill for oil, you have to develop rural villages and towns. So if you want to put a dairy farm in, or if you want to put an oil well in, you got to help hire people. You got to build, get people jobs. So you see some oil companies that are getting in the dairy business in Iraq, and that market's open for U.S. genetics. Mexico, if you're interested in something closer to home, you're a commercial producer, you raise heifers. Mexico has announced a repopulation program because they've been affected by drought for the last 10 years. So in the last few weeks, they have a interest program to loan money to people, low-interest loans, and trying to build the cattle numbers back in Mexico. So that'll be something that you'll probably see starting in the spring and next summer that certainly could have an impact for you here. Libya, it's another country that once the politics have settled down, they quit throwing rocks. They're putting their dairy industries back. Country of Vietnam, even though we may not export to them because our transportation costs are very high, I've been to Vietnam 26 times in the last 12 years. But they're going to buy enough dairy cattle because they have a government program that they want every kid, every child in that town to have at least a cup of milk a day. So they're trying to bring in as many as 10,000 to 12,000 head of dairy cattle over the next 16 months. A lot of those will come from Australia, but that'll take cattle off the market. Keeps door of opportunity open for us in other places. Jordan, we just sent our first shipment to Jordan. We sent 1,055 head of bred heifers on a boat back in July. That market just opened in March of this year. And then the newest market that's opened in the past 6 weeks has been Ukraine. And Ukraine or Russia, somebody in there is going to have to be the breadbasket of Eastern Europe because there's enough livestock production being pushed out of Western Europe that this is going to be an opportunity. We talk about here in places of 28 inches or 18 inches of topsoil, they've got 8 feet of it. If they get their hands around of it, they're going to be a real force in that part of the world as far as raising food for the rest of Europe. So anybody in your marketing plans, as this country develops, I am pretty optimistic on this place. The only problem is in our protocol negotiations with health, they've got to be non-vaccines for brucellosis. So this is something that's going to be dragging out, but it's taken almost 7 years of negotiation to get this market open. I'm going to talk to you just a little bit about competition. And it's competition in this country as far as what some of the swine producers are doing. If you're in the genetic business and selling beef seed stock, we have a lot of our clients that we're working with that we're actually putting up swine units in China where we're actually producing U.S. pigs. We build the buildings. We furnish all the genetics. We furnish the help. We train their people. We have apartment complexes to keep them on the farm for biosecurity. And we tie all of their production of their purebred hogs back to our country with all their breeding values, performance data into our servers, and we know where their best lines are and to help them develop their genetic program. And so now they produce a pedigree, an animal that's actually registered here in America with the National Swine Registry, and the largest producer of American Yorkshire pigs last year is located in Changsha, China. So it's kind of a McDonald's franchise. But when we were shut out of the market for 23 months, in China, we're still selling U.S. pigs in China to keep that market open. This is something that our business has changed in the last couple of years. It's not only for hogs, but we're also doing it for cattle. We're doing it for dairy. Of people that are coming in, they want to make a joint venture. If I made one mistake in the last 10 years as far as market development, when I first started going to Russia, I was calling on breeders and farmers to talk about where they were going to go. I should have been calling on food companies. Because that used to be a big deal when you come in the office and somebody had an inquiry for 100 bred heifers. The one I had yesterday was for 4,000. they're just throwing numbers at it, and they're just the help and the management and the relationships are going to have to be made in that part of the world for that much land base. This will be something that a lot of you will be approached about, something that you'll need to think about, and it's finding the right partners and having the right deal that works for you financially and the right thing that you can manage, but it's something that you're going to see more and more of. I'm going to talk to you a little more about some obstacles and concerns that affect me, affects our business, of how we operate. Demands of foreign veterinarians to visit the United States. This is a thing that when you export to Russia or Kazakhstan or China, we have people that come here. Russia sends people here for 21 days to supervise the shipments. The Chinese, when I do a shipment to China, they're here for 60 days. I have four veterinarians here in the United States, and they don't know anything about the United States. I'll give you an example. Four Chinese right here that are in my office the other night, first two arrive, and they want to go. They have an apartment rented in Jefferson City. They do their own cooking. They go to Walmart. They buy $38 worth of food for their apartment, and he goes to check out, and they ring it up, $38. He goes, I'll give you $24. Dr. Wu, you don't understand. Walmart doesn't negotiate. Everybody negotiates. Well, I'm going to go over here by the door and wait, and you work it out with Mr. Walton. He paid $38. So, but when they come onto your farm and to supervise, they've got you. So you've got to kind of follow the protocol and know what you're up against and ask lots of questions. Animal identification. And I know that I've had people threaten to whip me over this, but it's been talked about this morning. We can take this cattle market and these prices to another level. Another level of feeder cattle. But we're going to have to get our arms around some sort of animal identification that works for everybody. A lot of places in the world that want to buy cattle, they've got to come to the United States. They go to New Zealand. You've got to go to Australia. You can go to Uruguay. China signed an agreement this week to buy 500,000 head of cattle from Romania, of all places. Animal identification to get us into some of these markets and to keep us in this markets. And if we have a disease outbreak in this country in any part and we regionalize parts of the United States, it's going to have to come back to animal ID. We've got to have effective USDA, APHIS, U.S. Trade Representative negotiators. We're three generations away from the farm of people that are negotiating for you and for me. As an example, when this Ukraine market was trying to open, their first set of health regulations had in there the animals would be quarantined for 21 days, and they put in there that every day we're going to record the daily temperature from each animal. If I've got 1,000 head in quarantine, that's not going to work. But that's somebody on our side that was negotiating that. That didn't take place. But those are the reasons we got to have people that have been around this. We see things like blue tongue, because you've been drier here. Dry weather has moved farther to the north. You have more vectors, so we see a bigger spread of blue tongue. And that's always been your advantage in this part of the world, because you've had colder climate. Your cattle are almost always blue tongue negative. This is something that's going to come into effect. BSE continues to be in negotiations, because when we have that one that pops up, countries kind of pull the reins back a little bit and wonder about us. Our U.S. export regulations, the risk we have for testing at tuberculosis on your farm. USDA has to find 2% suspect. They can't be exported. Then if you go in, if you happen to find a positive one, that's a real problem. APHIS export procedures. Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. These are the people that endorse your health papers for export. If you didn't know it, on October 1st this year, they went to a reorganization. It's not like it used to be when you had your health certificates endorsed. You have no more area veterinarians in charge for your state. You now have six regions in the United States. I'll show you the maps and how this has changed. This is the way it used to be. Everybody had an area veterinarian in charge. If I had an issue in Missouri, I went to my office. We worked it out. This is the new map. It started October 1st. So you see where you're at today, up here. The person that's going to make your decisions is Kim Kirkham in Topeka, Kansas. Now, you still have I think they call it an assistant director here to have your export certificates endorsed. But look at this, how this has changed and where your places are at. APHIS is going to reduce a lot of staff. You're not going to have the services that you once had. So this is something that our Livestock Exporters Association, we're having a seminar February 19th in Kansas City, and we'll have all of these USDA directors in to explain this. That's open. for people to come to. If you have veterinarians involved in the export business and want to come and try to figure this out, we invite you to come to Kansas City, and that's on the Livestock Exporters Association website. Other concerns, we have the same thing as far as our customers around the world, the price of feed and corn, animal welfare groups, and transportation. This is something that we have to be aware of as well, because you know, we put animals on a boat for 25 days, or we put pigs or other animals on a plane. We're regulated, but if we have a problem or an accident, it makes the front page of the newspaper, top half, and that comes back to affect our business. People in Europe right now are filing a grievance with the World Trade Organization to say that we have an advantage over them, because you know, in Europe, when the weather gets over 80 degrees Fahrenheit, they can't truck livestock over 80 degrees. They think those things should be applied here. And when it gets over 80 degrees, I mean, I've been up early a lot of mornings in July and August when it was already 80 degrees. So that's some pressure that we're feeling from outside the country. Airlines are pulling in their reins a little bit about the number of animals we can put on 747s. We continue ability to transit other countries and airports. I can't send cattle into Europe because they have blue tongue. They have a different type of blue tongue than we have. Their blue tongue kills animals where ours doesn't. But they like to keep us from transiting their airports to go on to reach other places like in Africa. Emergence of foreign livestock dealers. Since this thing has become so good in the United States, we've had a lot of people coming here from other countries and hung shingles up and maybe cutting a few corners that people are getting their hands slapped. The requirements of importing governments for pedigree information. A lot of people in Russia and Kazakhstan, if they want to get subsidies from their country, from their government, as much as $1,000 or $1,100 a head, they're going to have a pedigree. Russia, they need to be 75% registered. Kazakhstan, you got to be 100% registered. Ukraine, you got to be 100% registered. So some of those type things. Continuing user fees and what we pay USDA to approve our exports. My grandpa once told me no tree grows to heaven, but this is what I pay in USDA overtime and to have certificates endorsed. We started back in about 92 at about $38 an hour. Monday morning at 3 a.m. when I start, about $144 an hour. And I have to pay them two hours driving time to drive from the back of the room to come to our export site. And the reason I make a little bit of side about this, at some point this will change. Our Canadian counterparts pay $60 an hour. So if exporting is interest and it's interest to our country and our government, someplace this has got to level out. So I'll get off the soapbox. The export dollars go. I know I'm running close on time, but I'm just going to run through this. This is one export project we recently had and how it affects everybody regardless of where you're from. The people showed up on United Airlines. We picked them up in rental cars. We eat in restaurants. We select the animals. Local veterinarian blood test all those animals. We send the blood by FedEx or UPS to the lab. We pay a lab fee. When I send them by the airport, we build wooden crates and buy lumber from the lumber yard. We pay banking fees for our letters of credit, the insurance companies, and it creates money. For every $1 billion worth of goods that are exported from the United States, about 8,400 jobs are created, and it's regardless of where we're flying out of New York, Chicago, or Miami, or if it's boatloads from Wilmington, Delaware, the containers from Eastport, Maine, or where we cross the Mexican border. We create lots of jobs that comes back into rural communities. And just to show you, this is just loading our ship to go to Jordan. You see the crane, the trucks, the hay, and everything that goes involved as far as when we charter a vessel and we move animals. So what does the future hold? For every $1 billion, I said, 8,400 jobs are created. 2011, we had a tremendous growth. In 2012, we're a $1 billion industry in this country, just in animal genetics alone. And that's not talking about the horses, you know, and some of the high-dollar racing horses and things like that. What's ahead? I know we don't do export live cattle to China, but this is just one example. You take the population of our country, 310 million people we have in this country, that many people in China by the year 2020 will move to the middle class. That's taken a big step up in that many people. And when they start to eat better and buy better products, and this is just one country, And this is what I think is ahead for us, of this many people moving, and they've got to have the food. And where are they going to get it? We've got it. Come and get it. And it's something that I continue to believe that will drive our economy. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity. Jack, have time for maybe just a couple of real quick questions.